once you go down that green hole outside the lighthouse in bad weather, you're taking your life in your hand, like. That's because if you hadn't the Duke's permit,
the Duke's permit.
Have to stay outside the line.
You had to stay outside the line. And why? For a permit.
This is Pat Parker and Sean Murphy, whose family have fished the Blackwater Estuary in Yall Harbour for generations.
No one will ever master the sea.
We've got a good few flights out there and too.
Yall Harbour is privately owned. It's been in the Duke's family since 1753.
People fishing over the Yall.
One permit is there at the moment, I think.
Yeah. And the whole of Yall was involved in fishing back then. And I mean the whole of Yall, like everything went through the fishing at that time. And everyone couldn't get a permit. See, there was a lot of boats, you know, and they couldn't get permits. And it was strictly enforced, like, and they made sure.
To fish in the harbour,
it was enforced.
You have to pay for a state licence and for a permit from the private owner.
Yeah, there was, like, and people were rearing families and they had to go out because that's the only thing that they had at the time, like. In my own time as a young fella being reared, like, when the salmon was over after that 6 months, times were hard. And I mean, they were hard, like. There was nothing in the houses. They'd be pinching and scraping for the rest of the time, like, until the salmon came around again, like.
But that's all in the past now.
So they had no other choice, only to go out on the water.
Drift net fishing is banned in the harbour.
And there was no engines in them days, like. They were pulling boats, like, to rear families and what have you, like, and they had to go out, they had to take chances. There was only a certain amount of permits, and that Englishman had the right to hand out the permits to who he see fit to hand them. And to this day, he can still do it.
This is a story about the River Blackwater. It's a story about the communities who live along the banks of the river and about the man who owns around 20 miles of that river, the Duke.
Well, the Duke is the Duke of Devonshire, and his main home is Chatsworth House in England. Lismore Castle is his residence here. So he has a huge estate above there, and I'm sure he's a very nice man. I have no claims against his estate in Lismore or against his property, but I have a problem with him owning the harbour.
This is Ollie Casey.
What's so important? I suppose...
A town councillor from Yall.
When you look back and see the generations that lived on the river and had to pay for the privilege of fishing on a river belonged to the state, in my opinion. Practically to an absentee landlord, I suppose you could say.
For the past 18 or 19 years, Ollie has maintained that the harbour should be in the possession of the local authority.
How I became involved at all was that at a council meeting, the harbour master, Lord have mercy, he's gone now, he mentioned that we would have to ask the Duke's permission for to put moorings down in the harbour. Of course, I said, what? We have to ask the Duke for permission to put down something in our own harbour. And I was told, yes, that's correct, because he owned the bed of the river. So straight away, I mean, I said, oh, this is ridiculous. So I started then to take a real interest in the river, and I went off and got a folio 1645, which is a land registry. And the land registry map showed that we actually owned the river bed from the Sloblands heading out into the river for hundreds of metres and all the way out on our side of the river, out as far as Dysart on the Front Strand. And all this is on the land registry to Yall Town Council. So straight away I said, well, the Duke can't own it if it's registered to us.
Yall Harbour encompasses about 4 square miles.
So I did a bit more checking, and I found out that fishermen were prevented from putting down mussels or fishing without the Duke's consent, and they had to pay a licence to the Duke. And then I thought, mussels are attached to the bed of the river. They're not free-swimming fish. And why should the Duke stop somebody from putting mussels on the bed of our section of the river? So the whole lot developed from that. And I found that, the more I went into it, that the Duke was, I didn't think his rights were as strong as he claimed that they were. But I had no absolute proof beyond y'all what he actually did own. So Folio 1645 is the basis I'm coming from, and I'm saying he doesn't own the property in y'all harbour, and that the control of y'all harbour is in the Harbour Authority, which is now the Town Council. The council put aside some money, which is small money, because I mean, to go to the High Court or go to the Supreme Court would cost an awful lot of money, and us being a small council can't afford big money. But I would hope that the Duke would see sense in the meantime and relinquish his right, as he claims, or produce something like the folio we have, saying a deed saying this is mine, end of story.
But as far as you're aware, y'all Town Council never had jurisdiction over the waters here.
We have. We're the Port Authority here.
But you've never owned the fishing rights.
No, we've never been had ownership. But no, I would dispute that. It is control over the salmon in the river. Why else would you be paying a license?
Do you think it's a battle of the classes?
I don't feel any worse off than the Duke. The Duke, to me, is a man. And I suppose I would, in a sense, greet him as a man of authority, maybe carries a bit of power, but no more than I would say any other person. I give them the respect that they deserve. And I think probably he is a man of honour as well, I would think. Do you know? But class, I suppose, he certainly doesn't come from my class, you know. I wouldn't be invited to dinner now in the castle on a regular basis anyway.
I don't see. There's the two licences. There's the Southern Region Fishery Board, that one, and this is the Blackwater. Above Yarl Bridge we fished at Swankenly Castle. There's another lot in below Yarl Bridge.
Moving about 2 miles upstream from Yarl Harbour through the Duke's waters.
And where are we standing now, Roger?
We're standing in Ballinatash Quay.
I meet another drift net fisherman.
Ballinatash Quay.
Roger Morrison. This stretch of the Blackwater is well hidden from the public gaze.
This area is Ballinatash.
The river banks are densely forested.
You know, it's,
the land is rich.
That's what it's called.
And only a handful of houses look onto the river.
There's so many different named places.
A lot of the entrances around here have a no trespasser sign.
Over there. There's Frankley.
But you can see everything from the river.
Over that castle. See? This quay here was full of people back over the years when fishing has gone on. Now who do you see here? No one here today. The Duke was one of the best people that you ever dealt with. I mean, we're paying license to him, and they would never bother with those. And I'd have to stand, you know, this cold anyway. The fishing always, or the license always stayed within the family unless some of them died off and they were known to take it over. That was the private family from Lismore. Like my people now, they went back to the 18th century. And I passed on mine now to my son, you see. So it was an unbroken license every year from the 18th century. That's how long we take out this permit from this more.
And paying money to the Duke.
And paying money to the Duke, that's right. He would write to you before you took it out, and let you know that he'd be collecting it at the Devonshire Arms in Yarl. That's where they collected the license. I wouldn't want to see the Duke going down. He never done us any harm. We still have meetings with his agent to find out what's going on, and he's very cooperative in every way. Whereas when we try and get some information off the government, there's nothing but letters, negative letters coming back. They're looking into it. So at least with the Duke, you get a straight answer. They're honest to goodness with you. And you can't go any further than that. And it's not our fault that they've still got these more estates. That's the fault of the people that made the agreement in 1922. Not only with Lismore, but with all the other people as well.
Did you ever meet the Duke?
No, not personally, no. No. I never met him. So I was the agent we dealt with. Whatever agent would be in the castle, that's the man we deal with.
So far, I haven't met anyone who's actually met the Duke. For the next 11 miles or so, the river is a sort of no man's land. The water is difficult to access because of the wide slob banks and the rising and falling tides that push and drag the wild Atlantic salmon. There are no fishermen here and no anglers either. From Yall Harbour to Capoquin is about 17 miles, and the Duke of Devonshire owns more than 2/3 of this stretch of the river. From Capoquin to Lismore is a further 5 miles or so, and the Duke owns all that stretch of the river.
It's great country down here in West Waterford.
It's beautiful. I'm a Roscommon man, and I'm wedged up between Leitrim and Sligo, so the land would be, the first thing you notice is the land is beautiful, it's green, it's aristocratic, there's no rushes, there's no...
Brian Sheeran is the CEO of the Southern Regional Fisheries Board.
It's a beautiful part of the country. It's superb scenery, and it's a kind of a hidden Ireland to a lot of people. The Munster Blackwater, the valley of it is really beautiful from the top of Kerry down to Youghal.
And one of the richest aspects to the valley here is the river itself.
Well, the river is the engine of the valley because there's huge tributaries. It's a massive salmon river.
This year, the Southern Regional Fisheries Board will allow nearly 8,000 salmon to be caught on the River Blackwater.
You know, it supports a lot of tourist angling operators. There's a huge amount of visitors come into the area. The local communities are employed along the river. From the Youghal Lighthouse up to Carysville, the Duke of Devonshire would be the major owner. He'd be the majority stakeholder there. And there would be other small portions owned by other people, but they're... they'd be all singing off the same hymn sheet.
Have you ever met the Duke himself?
No, I haven't, no. Or I haven't met his son, Lord Burlington, either, so I only deal with his agents, and I wouldn't be, rubbing shoulders with them or invited to dinner parties or that.
If you did meet him, how would you address him?
Well, I suppose the Duke, you know, I don't know what his first name is even, so it would be, hello, Duke, nice to meet you.
The river moves sluggishly along these parts. At times, it's hard to even hear it. Nearing Capoquin, the river begins to change.
Watching the swans just taking off behind us. Oh, I think anybody that's grown up here loves the river, or most people would love it.
Just downstream from Capoquin, I met Jeremy Nicholson.
Well, I'm secretary of the Capoquin Salmon and Trout Anglers Association. And we have a club here in Capoquin. We have 4 miles of double bank fishing. I suppose at this point we're actually 17 miles upriver. It is indeed tidal in the main freshwater. Might be a touch briny in places, but I don't have a meter to actually measure that. But it's still tidal almost up to Lismore. It's privately owned by the Duke of Devonshire and Lismore Estates. And we've leased that this fishing since 1989. We renew it every year, and whatever our arrangements are every year, we confirm those. It's worked out very well. It means that we can provide fishing at very reasonable rates to people wishing to fish here compared to other parts of the river. For example, a day's fishing north of Capoquin and in one of the fishing lodges may cost you 140 odd euros a day, whereas an annual membership for people from outside of the Capoquin area is 130 membership. That's for the entire season. At the height of the season, 25 euros for the day, which is in September, or 12 euros a day early season. So it's a very economic way of providing fishing for both visitors and people from overseas.
Presumably the Duke gets some funds in relation to the lease.
Of course, yes. It's a lease, and we have to pay for our fishing. Essentially, we just lease the water, and we do our thing after that. We're not bound to any other arrangements. We just pay for our lease, and we operate our club as we see fit.
And what type of numbers are involved in the club?
Oh, I think we've a total of about 70 in total.
Has there ever been an issue in the Capucine area in relation to the river being privately owned?
Over time, we'll have people that wouldn't agree with the private ownership of the river, yes, indeed. But that's the way it is. The state recognises the ownership of the fishing rights by the Duke of Devonshire. The Central Fishery Board seems to recognise that from our investigations when we were doing our development works here. You know, as far as the law is concerned, that's the way it is, and that's what we've got to work with.
What would the general attitude towards the Duke be?
Oh, God. I suppose I never hear much about it, really. It's, I mean, people in the locality get on with their lives as I do. It isn't a subject that tends to come up. I don't know, he seems to have contributed by leasing us our water, so we can't complain as a club. We're pleased with that relationship.
The common factor in all of this stretch of the river is the Duke. I knew nothing about him, and neither, it seemed, did anybody else. No one had even met him, so I did a bit of research. It turns out he's a good friend of the Prince of Wales, the Queen's representative at Ascot, and one of the richest men in Britain. His main residence, Chatsworth House, has a roof space of 1.3 acres, 175 rooms, 3,500 feet of passageway, 17 staircases, 359 doors, 21 kitchens, and 56 toilets. I wanted to meet this man.
Good evening, Liam. You're welcome to Dungarvan, and I believe you have an interest in matters riparian, touching on the River Blackwater.
As recently as last year, the Duke's ownership of fishing rights was challenged by a group of anglers from the Dungarvan area. Paddy Gordon was their solicitor.
And, there have been a number of court cases. Well, the position at the time was that Capucine Anglers Association had taken a lease of a stretch of river from the Duke of Devonshire, and they were effectively administering the fishery at the behest of the Duke's agent. And I was asked to look after the interests of the people who were scheduled to appear in court on these charges. The main thrust of the charges was that they had been fishing on the Blackwater without a proper permit. The offences as brought related to a particular patch of ground on the river, just outside the town of Capucine. In this particular instance, the location was identified on a map, and the identity of the owner of the lands in question was established. And it transpired that his folio was silent on fishing rights. In other words, it didn't say whether they were vested in him or vested in anyone else either. So when we looked into the documents underlying his folio, it transpired that the Irish Land Commission in 1906, when they vested the lands in his forebears, the rights at that time were vested by the Irish Land Commission in the tenant at that time. And those rights, once we looked into them further, a chain of title could be established back to the 1800s. And indeed, this is verified in documentation which was furnished to us prior to the court case by the Department of Agriculture, who have stated in a letter of 2006 that the sporting rights on the lands in question were vested in the tenant by the Irish Land Commission.
During that trial, counsel for the Capucine Salmon and Trout Anglers Association produced an affidavit that the Duke's agent had found in the Land Commission archives. It stated that while sporting rights on the townland in question were vested in the tenant in 1906, the fishing rights had been reserved to Lismore Estates
and the Duke.
The Duke's title has been tested many, many times. The earliest cases that I'm aware of were in 1826 and 1827, where individuals by the name of Hodnett and Morrissey were prosecuted for... one was for cod fishing and the other was for having some kind of a weir on the river, and convictions were recorded in the course of those proceedings. In more recent times, in 1882, the question of rights on the river came before the House of Lords, and it would appear from the preamble to the decision handed down in that case that there were seven attempts or seven hearings of the case before a decision which was favourable to the Duke's interest was ultimately handed down by the House of Lords.
The 1882 case is of particular importance in that it laid the legal foundations for the Duke's rights on the River Blackwater.
In 1882, the House of Lords would have been effectively the supreme judicial body insofar as citizens of Ireland were concerned, and that remained so until the country gained its independence, and then, of course, our own Supreme Court was appointed and has administered, the judiciary, Irish judiciary, have administered law in this country since then. Of course, decisions of the House of Lords are of high persuasive value in this country right down to the present time, but they are not binding on this jurisdiction. They're, as I say, of high persuasive value, but no more. And in my view, where the circumstances have changed and additional material has come to light, certainly a decision such as that of the 1882 decision of the House of Lords touching upon the River Blackwater should be subject to review by the judiciary in this country in a normal manner.
Possibility of changing the course of Irish history.
Well, I suppose we're 800 years at it and there's still a bit to be done.
Why, in your opinion, does the Duke contest these fishing rights?
Well, I suppose human nature being what it is, if one has rights, one is inclined to protect them and hold on to them. And you don't lightly give away such an asset, because clean, fertile rivers are becoming a treasure. And if one has it, one is inclined to hold on to it. Thank you very much.
This is all Castle End now. It's far over now, as you can see.
Moving upstream from Capoquin to Lismore, you begin to approach the Duke's estate proper.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, in fairness, like, you know, just, you'd never hear anyone saying a bad word about the castle, like, you know. They've been very... very good, like, you know, the only thing you'll never get after Castle, you'll never get a sight. They don't like selling what they have.
When you see Lismore Castle, you think it was something from a fairy tale.
Which or who does, I suppose.
I went into the village for a pint and I asked if the Duke was around. They said he was above at the castle. I found out a week or so later it wasn't him. It was the Duke in waiting, his son,
looks,
Lord Burlington.
You know, what they have looks... certainly looks the part.
Nobody knew what the Duke looked like.
Certainly you come into Lismore on your left-hand side all the way down. There's all Castle Land on your left-hand side. There's the community centre that was built there a few years ago and all Castle Ground again. So, you know, in fairness, they've been very good to the town, supplying whatever land was ever supplied, the castle supplied it to benefit of the town.
Some people would say, should they have to give away in the first place?
I don't know, I wouldn't have allowed to answer that one now.
The front of the castle now comes into full view here, overlooking the river. It is just amazing, in fairness.
Absolutely fantastic.
Paul Whelan is the fishery manager at the neighbouring Fort William estate that leases fishing rights from the Duke.
They had an opportunity of taking the water from the castle in front of Lismore Castle, which is a 3-rod beat. Basically, we'd go in, have 3 rods at any one time fishing. It works pretty well. They have a good relationship with the castle, you know, so we try to, with the fishermen, try to keep it that little bit private then as well. So it's a lovely setting, and it does certainly help towards Fort William having that beat.
Paul is also a member of the local angling club in Lismore, who also lease waters from the Duke.
We have a club which we have 55 anglers,
that pays an annual fee every year to the castle. It is a closed shop. It is just for the people of the town. We've always had it, and it's a good relationship to have that the Duke can supply fishing for the locals of the town.
And would it be considered expensive now?
Well, it wouldn't. It wouldn't, but I suppose at the end of the day, it's for the people of the town. For maybe 2 or 3 days fishing in Fort William or upriver would be the equivalent of what we're paying in Lismore. But then again, we have 50 members. So, or 55 members. So 55 members, if they all went down there, it's just not having the freedom of the fishing. You might have to sit down and take your turn. Then again, he's supplied the fishing for the locals of the town. Now, there has been occasions where he's taking his own clients from the UK down, I suppose his own personal, maybe family members, and he would contact the secretary of the club, and we would hold off the river for the day or 2 days, whichever he likes.
Have any of the lads now in the club, have they ever fished with the Duke?
No, none of the lads. Just the lads, whatever lads that have fished. Not fishing with the Duke himself, fishing with maybe family members. I don't think any of the lads have fished with the Duke himself.
It's a great name to have, isn't it, the Duke?
Yeah, I suppose it is around here. You know, we don't know him. You know, Everton and Lismore, he was always the Duke, you know, the Duke of Devonshire. You know, certainly if you mentioned his proper name, people would say, who's he? You know, so he's just known as the Duke, Duke of Devonshire. Certainly I wouldn't know what to call him if he walked across the field, only the Duke.
March 18th, 2008. Pratt's Gentlemen's Club, Westminster, London.
Hello, good morning.
Hi, how are you doing? My name is Liam O'Brien. I have an appointment with the Duke.
Yeah. Come in.
Thank you very much.
And down the stairs. Out comes the bottom of the stairs, of course.
Lovely, thank you very much.
Right, could you still look after you? He's still at the his Ascot meeting upstairs, so.
No problem.
Mr. O'Brien?
Yes?
Hello there.
Ah. Duke.
Hello.
How are you getting on?
Good, thanks.
Thank you very much for taking the time to do
Not
this.
Not at all. No, I'm sorry I have kept you waiting.
That's okay, no problem.
Shall I disappear?
Yeah, okay, thanks, Mark.
I'll see my money, but I'll do it later.
Okay, thank you. Thanks. My parents both really loved being at Lismore, and we inherited that love as well. We've always regarded it as a sort of second home. We've always found the place and the people around the place extremely welcoming, and it's just a lovely, relaxing place to be. I don't know whether it's true, but I've heard that the Blackwater Valley is known as the Valley of Slumber, and certainly it's a place you sleep better than anywhere else. So it's a great place to relax, and there's beautiful places to visit. The gardens at Lismore are lovely. The town of Lismore is wonderful.
You have what some would consider a substantial estate in Lismore.
Yes, we are very lucky in that way. Historically, we have inherited a beautiful house and a very nice estate, and we're very lucky to have it.
And what size of estate are we talking about?
Well, the main farming estate is about 1,000 acres, and there's several thousand more acres of mountain land, which is problematic in value, but not problematic in beauty.
And of course, one of the main assets of the estate is the Blackwater itself, or some of the Blackwater.
Well, from our point of view, the ownership of the fishing rights and the bed of the river date back to the Earls of Desmond and then later to Sir Walter Raleigh. And through a convoluted and complicated series of happenstances, really, we do own quite a large part of the River Blackwater.
And the stretch of Blackwater that we're speaking about specifically to yourself in terms of ownership, what is that stretch?
Well, we own about 2/3 of the tidal water, which that extends from the mouth of the river to about 1/4 mile downstream from Lismore Bridge. And we also own a further mile of water upstream from Lismore itself, and then another 1 3/4 miles in the Fermoy area, around Clondalane, at a place called Caresville, and that was acquired by my grandfather in the late 40s.
Where exactly on the mouth of the river are we speaking about? Are we going out into Yall Harbour? Are we starting from Yall Bridge?
Well, we regard the estate ownership to be where the Blackwater reaches the sea, which is normally defined as a line across the mouth of the river from the Yawl Lighthouse.
And that's always been the case?
As I understand it, that is the case, yes.
There are some people in Yawl, in the town council there, who would have issue with that.
I know that there are, and I think that as far as the ownership of the Blackwater, particularly in the harbour and so on, the best thing that could possibly happen, and it may happen as a result of this discussion and your programme, is that we should sit down with the people in Yawl, the officials, and not deal with this discussion through the media, except in this particular case it's very helpful. There are a number of issues to be which we would love to resolve, and I would welcome an approach from the council to come and discuss them with us.
On the lower stretches of the river, approaching the mouth of the river, mm-hmm. there is a number of drift net licences. They've since been revoked due to government legislation.
Yes, we have suspended them voluntarily, but we still maintain the right to reinstitute them. And that will be something which won't happen just now, but we have not abandoned the right, the legal right to do it. But I think it's unlikely that we'll put that into practice in the immediate future, but I wouldn't like to say more than 3 or 4 years ahead. I think that, you know, situations change and we want to keep our options open.
But the way in which those licences were operated is that you're essentially keeping them within the family that they were initially held.
Yes, that's right. We've always adopted the thing that if people wish to continue to fish and to pay for the right to fish, pay us, which more or less covers the rates we have to pay, it is probably more sensible to continue a long-term relationship with people you know and get to know than to dot about and get a lot of different people all the time.
I've been speaking with some local fishermen and I've heard many sides of the story in relation to their perspective on yourself and the ownership of the fishing rights. One perspective is that they don't believe a private individual should own such a river.
Well, that's a perfectly reasonable political view, which I don't happen to agree with. So long as ownership is founded in law, and our ownership of the river is, we firmly and strongly believe, is completely securely founded in law, then whatever people may wish the case to be, that is what the legal case is.
The fact that, one, a private individual, and two, an English person owns an Irish river, that's always going to be a point of issue with some of the locals back at home.
Yes, it is. But of course, there's an enormous amount of businesses and property in Ireland, which are now owned by overseas interests. And in many ways, the vast investment, particularly from the United States, I think that probably people would say that has been to the benefit of Ireland. I'm not saying that our land holdings has that sort of effect on the Irish economy, but I think that the fact that where both England and Ireland are part of the European Union now, and I think this sort of nationalistic view about ownership of assets in a country is something which is getting less. But I quite understand it is an emotional issue.
It's almost too predictable, though, in a way.
Well, we all have our own political views. I have huge faith in the Irish people. It's a wonderful, wonderful and very successful country. One can only admire it. I think that the disagreements about the ownership of our particular assets, particularly the river we're talking about, is something which is probably of not huge interest to a large number of people, but I know that those people who are interested do feel quite strongly about it.
It's clear that you don't have a forceful relationship in terms of trying to force your rights or your way into the community, both in Yawl and along up the Blackwater into Lismore?
Well, we would defend our property rights, as would anybody, I think. What is ours, and if there is to be discussions about something to do with the river, particularly in Yawl, then let's have those discussions. But and it may be that we can come to some sensible agreement for the benefit of everybody. But we expect the property rights to be respected, and of course indeed they are, and always have been by the courts, and otherwise than that, we don't regard ourselves as particularly aggressive landowners, but on the other hand, if there are things that we can do by discussion, as I say, we will sit down and think about it.
Up until now, Why is it that a relationship couldn't have been opened up between the Old Town Council and yourselves?
Well, I think I'm not quite sure of the answer to that, but it may be that we should now sort of turn over a new leaf and see what we can do talking to them, and I'm sure that something good will come out of that.
That invitation by the Duke to the authorities in Youghal is the first ever since any Duke of Devonshire has held the rights to Youghal Harbour. It would seem that the River Blackwater is in safe hands.
Well, it's in many hands, of which we are one. We will do our best to make it safe, to keep it safe, and make it prosper.
Is it a place that you love?
It's a place I have... Yes, I love it very much. I think that it's one of the most magical places I've ever been to anywhere in the world.
Would it be fair to say that your general mindset or ethos in the river would be what we have, we hold?
I think my mindset would be what we have, we hold, and we try to improve.
The most lucrative fishing rights that the Duke owns is the 1.75 miles stretch at Careysville, considered by many to be the best salmon fishery in the country.
The type of people who come to Careysville, are they Irish or are they from other parts of the world?
They're from all over. There's quite a number of English. We do let several weeks to Irish clients, and we have European clients as well. The only Americans usually who come are sometimes John Magner, who's a friend of mine. He sometimes brings some of his golfing associates down there, and so Tiger Woods has fished there once or twice, and a few of the other well-known golfers have fished. But that's not a regular thing. It's just occasionally they come down as guests from Coolmore. The amount that we charged varies, of course, according to the time of year. It varies, sometimes with hindsight, at the end of a week. It depends on the performance of the river, and so we charge what is a completely commercial rate for that fishing.
Which is, roughly speaking?
I don't have the figures to hand, but I could probably get them for you.
A week at Careysville will cost you between 2,500 and 4,000 euro, depending on the time of year. For that, you'll have exclusive access to a 5-rod beat and full board accommodation. There is a 2.4-metre high weir at Careysville. At present, the Duke is challenging the state about this matter. Brian Sheeran, CEO, Southern Regional Fisheries Board.
You know, I have responsibility for making sure that fish are able to move up the rivers and that there's no impediment to the thing. But with Careysville, the problem is that sometimes you get low water and runs of fish, and if they can't get across the barrier, it holds up fish and it's distressful for them. The minister, taking advice from the Department of Marine Engineers, issued an order that it has to be removed, and I understand it's under judicial review, and I really can't say any more than that about it.
Presumably, like any person who owns private waters that are open to fishing of any kind, there are rates to be paid.
Yeah, the rates are levied on fisheries around the country, and the rate is struck every year. And the Duke would have somewhere between 15 and 20,000 pounds pays every year to the Fisheries Board in rates.
Along the Blackwater here, we'll say, I mean, it's difficult to calculate presumably, but if we took 1 mile of double bank fishing rights, I mean, mm-hmm. Could you hazard a guess as to the value of those in today's money?
Well, in the Blackwater, I'd say it'd be... 1 mile each bank, I'd say, you know, around 500,000, half a million, I'd say, you know, would be around that in my estimation now. That's from other fisheries that you hear about being sold. But a half a million would be conservative, I'd say.
In relation to that, the Duke would own approximately, give or take, somewhere between 18 and 20 miles of double bank fishing here.
Yeah, he would, and you know, you can work it out for yourself. It's a great asset to have and to own. You know, I wish I had it.
The River Blackwater is loved by the Duke, the communities that surround it, and the people who work there. Peter Pielski is one of those people. He's the manager at Careysville House.
And Peter, we're standing in a hut by down by the riverbank of the Blackwater, but it's the finest hut I've ever been in.
It's a cricket hut. It was brought over, I think, about 25 years ago and put up. So it was brought from England, and it just does the job very well.
And the premise of the hut is that the anglers come here and...
They come here. It's obviously protection from the elements, and also they have their lunch here, so they get served a three-course meal at lunchtime, waitress service, and if they get bored with fishing, they can sit in here and just read books and have a glass of wine or two.
Down at the mouth of the river in Yall Harbour, Pat Parker and Sean Murphy may never fish again. Driftnet fishing is a thing of the past. Standing in Ballinaclash Pier, the Duke's permit that Roger Morrison handed down to his son, that's been in his family for more than 200 years, may never be used again. There are other traditional fishermen in the river, like the snap-net fishermen of Capoquin, who are in the same position.
And of course, the main attraction for the house itself is its proximity and fishing rights on the Blackwater.
Well, yes, it's one of the few houses where you can just peer out the window and see a fantastic salmon fishing river beneath you, and you can drive down to the river, to the hut, and be there in 2 minutes.
Is it a busy place?
We're fully booked all the time, fully booked. Some weeks are busier than others. You might get four or five people. Sometimes you get a big crowd when if they've got something to celebrate, but we can take 10, 12 people. That's about the maximum.
Fishing the Blackwater has come to mean angling. Fishing is about economics, permits, and tourism. But when an angler drives into Careysville, the package is all-inclusive. Whatever happens to fishing on the Blackwater, the Duke of Devonshire maintains an interest.
And in terms of the types of people who arrive at your doorstep here in Careysville?
You can get anyone. Last week we had a fellow who came across on his own private jet from America and took the helicopter from Shannon. A couple of weeks before that we had the local fruit and veg men who came and took the house for the week. We get all kinds of people. They just got one thing in common. They like to fish for salmon.